Welcome to One More Game presented by Hoosier Pickleball. I'm your host, Matt Brandenberger. This is BDO, Bang Dink Al. So that means I have Ryan Kearns with me. And even though you might see on your screen it says Ryan Kearns unverified, I have verified. This is indeed Ryan Kearns. So good to see you, Ryan. How you doing?
Good. Sun's out. Kind of like a few weeks ago, the sun was out. It's not as warm as we'd like it for it to be, but we're in Indiana, and I guess we'll take it.
Yep, it's still March in Indiana, so it means every day could be beautiful and perfect, or winter conditions, snow flurries. There were some of the biggest snowflakes I think I've ever seen in my life here about a week ago. I looked out my window and I was like, what is this? I thought it was 70 the day before, so... but yeah, it has been a while, man. We've had a lot going on. You've had a lot going on. You were at the Combine for NPL. We're going to be talking a fair amount about that today because our guest, spoiler alert, was also doing the Combine. So how have you been?
Fine. Really enjoyed last weekend. It was the NPL, National Pickleball League, the 50-plus senior pro league that last year had only six teams and now expanded to 12 teams. So first weekend of March, they had a combine. None of these 50-plus people are doing the 40-yard dash or the bench press or anything like that that's going to get us hurt, but more like some rec games down there in Florida. First weekend of March, a few of our friends went to that and some other ladies we know from the Indy area. And last weekend in just outside Dallas at the Chicken and Pickle, Natasha, our subject today, and I were fortunate enough to go to that and get in some games against good people. So it's fun.
That's awesome. So for those that don't know, the NPL, essentially, is it fair to say, is the equivalent to MLP, but on the senior side of things? Is that a pretty fair comparison? Because it is a team type league and kind of formats around that whole team style events, right?
Yeah, fair comparison. Just difference is the number of people. I think there's like 12 people in a lineup in a given match versus MLP only having four.
Okay. And so how do those matches look then? I guess I might be ignorant.
So, that as well. Yeah, so essentially you have six guys and six girls in your lineup. So you have three men's doubles matches, three women's doubles matches, six mixed doubles matches. So essentially you have 12 head-to-head matches.
Wow.
If a team wins 7 out of 12 or more, then they have won the head-to-head meeting, you know, and get a win in the standings. Then the other team gets a loss. If it gets to 6-6, they have a team breaker, not dream breaker, not singles. Apparently it's a longer extended game where it could be doubles, mixed doubles. I think it's just you put two of your players in there for a total of 4 points and you keep rotating different doubles or mixed doubles combinations through against the other team for 4 points until you reach whatever the magic number is.
That's cool. I guess I didn't realize that. So kind of a bummer for you being a stronger singles player. I'm sure you would prefer there to be singles, especially with, you know, the being one of the younger seniors right at the 50-year-old barrier. So that's interesting, though.
Yeah.
So and then on your team, so because you don't necessarily have to go to every event. So roster size and actual team that shows up is must be a little inflated then, or how does that work?
Yeah, apparently there's 14 on a team, 7 guys, 7 girls.
Okay.
You have 12 in your lineup during a given match, 6 guys, okay. 6 girls. And it sounded like last year there were some situations maybe where they had to pull subs from a pool of players or, I don't know if they're local recommended or whatever, because obviously it might be tough to coordinate.
Yeah. Absolutely. And the big day you'll find out is April 14th. Is that correct?
Yes, that's the reveal. Apparently, sometime a few days before that, they actually have the draft behind closed doors.
Okay.
And do any sort of trades or any kind of, roster manipulations that might happen. And then April 14th, right before the U.S. Open, they just announce the rosters. I don't think, other than the people who are in the room, nobody knows your actual what round you might have been drafted in or whatever. It's just like your team gets announced.
Yeah. And so you're feeling decent about your prospects. You said you played pretty well down there. And I really liked talking to your strategy going into it. You know, being the smart pickleball player you are, you know your strengths, and you said you really kind of tried to set yourself up as being a top-notch Colin opposed to a top-notch Ben. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's fair to say. I play a more probably conservative style of pickleball, and in higher level games, I'm pretty comfortable on the right side. So I tried to, you know, take on more of that role. Obviously, there were some games or matchups where I felt maybe I was the stronger player on the court. So except more of a little left side role. But then again, at this combine, not a lot of teams are stacking. You're playing with somebody you just met 5 minutes ago.
Right.
You know, there's some awkward, you know, there's some awkward moments where, you know, it's like, well, I can't really say, or don't want to say this, you know, without coming off the wrong way. Like, hey, maybe we ought to stack, or hey, maybe we ought to try this. You know, you just,
yeah. Hey, you suck. Positive. So I want you on the right side. Right. That doesn't go real well. So yeah, it's almost kind of like almost a reality competition type thing where there's probably a lot that goes into it. And it's not just the competition itself, but trying to, you know, kind of make sure you're getting along with people. I'm sure the owners are watching that as well. They want enthusiastic people and people who are going to be, you know, good representations of their brand or whatever they are hyping. So that's good.
Yeah. They definitely want team players because they don't want somebody out there that, you know, just isn't a good partner, because if that's the case, why would they pick that person if they don't think they can be a good partner?
Right. Sure. All right. Well, cool. I think that's a great kind of setup for getting to talk about Natasha. We'll kind of get into talking how she did at the NPL and kind of set up the match that we did just earlier this week at some rec play that we had going on. So we'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll get right to it. See you right after this.
Parents, your teen driver or soon-to-be driver looks to you for guidance on safe driving techniques.
Drive Alive is an organization dedicated to young driver safety. Visit our website at drivealiveindiana.org to view videos designed to facilitate conversations between parents and their teen drivers.
Topics include getting to know your vehicle, understanding car insurance, simple car maintenance, and what to do if you just had an accident.
Visit drivealiveindiana.org to learn more.
All right, welcome back to One More Game and Bang Dink Ow, your podcast where Ryan Kearns and I break down video, look at the good, the bad, and the ugly. And as mentioned before the break, our subject is Natasha Nurgi. Ryan, what do you have to say about Natasha? She's, by the way, on the court. I guess I'll set it up first and then I'll kind of ask you your thoughts on Natasha. But far side in the black is Josh Walker, and I'm in the blue ace shirt. Ryan's in the near us in the red, and then Natasha is kind of behind Ryan there in the black shirt and visor. But Natasha, like we said, was at the NPL combine, same thing you were at, and it's safe to say she turned some heads there. Is that fair?
That's fair. Yes. Day one, she went 7-0 in her pod. There were 8 people in a pod. You played with the other 7 people, one game to 11 straight up. And she went 7-0 and was slated to be in one of the 2 quote unquote championship pods to play for the automatic draft pick. However, due to plane flights and timing, they didn't allow it because they wanted to make sure there was plenty of time to finish. But being a very tall lefty with some power, she stood out and was definitely noticed.
Yeah, that's awesome. And even on a recent podcast, Rick Witzkin mentioned her. There was some Facebook video that went around. So, I mean, the chances of her not getting drafted are slim to none. I mean, she's going to be drafted. She's going to be one of the higher draft picks on the female side. Is that fair to say?
I think that would be fair to say. I mean, there's probably a few, you know, seasoned pro ladies that play a lot of the tour events and end up on the medal stand that you know, are going to get picked a little bit higher. But in terms of the people in the combine, she was as good as everybody else that was in the Texas one.
Yeah, that's awesome. And no surprise to us. I mean, we've been playing with Natasha for 3-4 years now. She's known, you know, for sure as one of, if not the best female around, and former IU singles number one tennis player. So she has all the tools. That said, there's definitely some things that Natasha would say as well. And that's why she was excited to be a subject on this, that she could improve on. So there are some things in this game, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you look at it, she didn't make too many errors. Unfortunately, from my standpoint, because I'll just go ahead and say, Josh and I did not fare very well in this match. So you're going to see Ryan's going to look pretty good in this. Natasha's going to look pretty good. And Josh and I, especially myself, this is a little bit of humble pie for me to eat, but we didn't have time to record another one and we're going to roll with it. So
yeah,
it's all good. But no, Natasha played well, but we'll still kind of pick out a few things that we think she could improve on.
Yeah, I was glad you did the introductions there. That way you essentially did identify you and Josh over there. I was maybe going to consider you guys in the witness protection program after how that game went and just say, yeah. Oh, there's these two 4 or 5+ guys over there that you know.
Right. Yeah, we're not sure who they are. They look a lot like a couple guys we know, but no, we'll take the good with the bad. We all have those days, those weeks. So Natasha, getting us started here, pretty good point to start out. Ryan, anything to note, really?
I think there was a couple early shots where she did play the ball with a backhand, and she could have played with a forehand. So that was kind of one of the things going in, was looking at. When she plays women's doubles, she is typically the alpha as a strong, lengthy player, takes a lot of middle, takes up a lot of space out there, and it's hard to get balls by her. Just at higher level mixed doubles, playing with a righty guy, would ideally slide to her right a little bit more to play more balls with a forehand whenever possible.
So I paused the video right here, and I think this is one of the spots you're talking yep. about. And just early on, as we talk about ideal positioning, what would be ideal for Natasha, it's almost playing that Anna Lee role, right? Where only the advantage is, you know, obviously Anna Lee's backhand is amazing, but for Natasha, it would be her forehand as a lefty. You would actually want to see her slid over a couple feet where she's literally on the line, like right foot on yep. the line, straddling yep. the line. What would you say there?
I think right foot on the line is pretty fair for a normal spot. Now, I mean, I guess based on where you have it frozen, yep. and she could almost go left foot on the line, because you know it'd yep. be almost impossible for you to go cross court back behind me. So right. you're probably going, you know, down the line or middle. At a guy's game, you might even have somebody potentially earning you in that situation. I mean, that's another, almost like the ATP, like a learned skill that does take some time. But yes, in her case, in that situation, maybe she's even over like two more steps, almost straddling the line or left foot on the line with the forehand just loaded up to attack.
Yeah, because where you see I put this ball is right kind of at her left shoulder, more or less. And if she's over just a step, she'd be able to take that with her forehand and either really drive it right back up the line at me, or even find that gap between Josh and myself. So point there early, you know, we ended up, you know, winning that rally. And if we had her a little bit moved over to that line, that could have gone the other way then.
Yeah. And the way the point finished was basically a clean winner down the line past her, which it was a low ball at her feet. But if she slid over a little bit more, she probably has a better play on that ball, the final shot.
Sure. On this next point, your notes say deep return down the middle. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, she hits a almost perfect return deep and down the middle, and it sets us up and we're on offense the entire point. I mean, you and Josh play together a lot, but it was, you know, down the middle to the point where you're both held back. It was deep, so, you know, it wasn't a ball you could really attack, or maybe, you know, it was a tough spot for you to hit a good third. And once again, we were on offense the entire point and won the point, but it was all set up with a deep return down the middle.
And that's a good point for anybody, any level, right? A good return deep down the middle can really set it up. And even to highlight then your fourth shot kept me back and kept Josh kind of, you know, he let it go back to my forehand. And again, that set up the whole point. And then you're able to pretty much hit the kill on your sixth shot there. So well played there. Let's go to the next point here. This is a pretty good point, but again, you're seeing Natasha hit a few backhands that you would rather see her go to her forehand. Is that fair?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, the first ball she ended up playing that point was a forehand, but then the next time it came there ended up being a backhand. And even there a moment ago where she's sliding forward in the transition zone, she's playing a ball in the transition zone with her backhand, which all she can do is hope to get it down as opposed to really attack it. If she's another step or so to her right, she could probably attack that transition zone ball and be more aggressive with it.
Right. So yeah, not going to lie, after the first couple rallies, thinking she did skip one off the line there.
Yeah.
Thinking, man, this is Natasha's video. Can't make her look bad. You know, we've won the first two. Little did I know it was going to turn around quickly for us.
Yeah. Yeah. She goes on a roll a little bit after this.
Yeah. You liked her drive on the third on this one.
Yeah, I definitely liked the drive on the third. The fifth, I could have gone either way. It ended up being fine. It looked like she was a little bit off her back foot. Like first drive, boom, good. This one, she's backing up, backpedaling.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is she didn't pop it up. So it was still fine and got us to where we basically got to the kitchen line and were somewhat neutral.
All right. And we won't talk about me stealing Josh's forehand there. That was the beginning of the end of our demise here. So here was one you said you didn't mind the backhand in this point. And let's see where that was, or did it already happen?
I think there was a backhand. There was a backhand early on. So, I mean, there's going to be times like where we're in the transition zone, like here, where you can't slide like too early. Like ideally we're more at the kitchen line established when you're going to slide to the right. I mean, when we're back, we have so much area to cover. If she slides to the right early on in the point in the transition zone, now I have to cover like 75 or 80% of the court, which is a little bit difficult. So early on the backhand was fine. I don't want people to think that we're saying, you know, she should never hit a backhand, should never hit a backhand unless she's at the baseline. There are going to be times in the transition zone where a backhand is going to be the appropriate ball. It's once you get to the kitchen, now let's figure out where the ball is. And in most cases, probably take a little step or so to your right to open up that forehand.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's by no means are we saying she should never hit a backhand, but just looking for more forehand opportunities. And in this next one, she did a great job. I'll say she attacks both the third and then the fifth again, which ends up winning the point. And she has such a strong forehand, she should be doing more of this. And I'll say at the tournament that I played in last weekend, this is something that I noticed that's kind of that 5-0 plus level. Like once you get to like a plateau at some point of being able to slow it down and hitting the right shots, you've got to be able to really attack those mid-level balls, those ones that aren't obvious drives, but keeping them low and staying engaged in that firefight, initiating that. And she did a good job on that point.
And that's where being left-handed really is going to help her out as far as a female in a mixed doubles scenario kind of coming in poaching or looking to take care of pop-ups. A lot of females that are right-handed are going to have to play a lot of those balls with a backhand, whereas she could play it with a forehand. And then even on the second one, she did a good job of like, she kind of crouched down a little bit since she's a taller player to be able to better put away the ball at the end, which was a good move, a little tougher to do for tall people.
Yep. And with risk and reward comes some errors. And on this point, you see here, she drives her third into the net. So the one tip that I would have there for her is, you know, whatever it takes, either more practice and getting more consistent or just dialing it back a little bit and knowing that you don't have to hit. It's more important to hit that ball 2 inches over the net than it is to hit it, you know, at 100% velocity. So trying to find that right level where you're saying, I'm never missing a third. Like if I have to aim a foot over the net, I'm going to try to make sure that I get it in to then set up, kind of like the previous point where she maybe hit her third a little high, but it still came back to her in another attacking position. So easier said than done, but just making less mistakes and adjusting your margin for error so that you can stay in a point.
Yep.
All right, next point here. Good job of moving in and looking to cut off the pop-up. So she's trusting you right there as you're hitting a third, and she was kind of hunting a little bit, which caused Josh to get pretty good shots keeping you back, and you guys eventually lost that point. But again, we watched Natasha as you are taking the third. She's getting in there a little bit, and you like that.
Yeah, I definitely like that. It especially with her big forehand sitting in the middle, it kind of narrows the window where they can push the ball back to me. Yes, after a couple balls, I finally missed in the net, but she was applying a little bit of pressure. So that like I said, the window narrowed to where they could go with their shot.
Yeah. So here's some examples of where you'd like to see Natasha staying more on her forehand. So the ball comes to me, I come cross court to her a couple times, and even that one there, you're saying you would prefer this to be a forehand?
Yeah.
She's in a better position.
Especially since it's coming from you cross court. If it was coming from Josh straight ahead, she probably has to play that a little more like straight up and be closer to the middle of her box. But because it's coming from you cross court, I think she could sit forehand just a little bit more, or sit neutral, but as she sees it coming to her, then go ahead and take another step or so to play that first ball as a forehand.
Yeah, because look where she's at right now. She's hugging middle a little much, right?
Yeah. I mean,
you'd rather her sit a little bit closer to her line, or like you said, read it off my paddle, and she should have enough time. I mean, it's not like I wasn't hitting a speed up. This is more of a drop.
Yeah.
So she kind of stays flat-footed there. I mean, you see she's on the balls of her feet, but she, you know, just kind of goes to her backhand. Then if I take it slowly here, she kind of sits down on it, and then she kind of moves a little bit and then goes, lets it bounce to her backhand. But there would have been plenty of time to slide a little bit and hit that forehand. And it comes back to her again.
Comes back to her, and it went backhand again.
Yeah.
And she's very close. She's very close to the center line there too.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And she's stepped back a little bit off of her line as well. It's almost like we'd rather see her staying on the line, kind of loading up almost. You know, I picture like Jackie and Jade when we play with them, like they're sitting there and they're loading up. So if that ball comes on her forehand, and Natasha does that sometimes. I've definitely hit one up the middle and she's just been ready to rocket it back at me, but kind of sit on it and load up a little bit, ready on that forehand.
Yep.
So caused a little bit of an error for her then to hit it outside, and you're probably coaching her a little bit saying
and a lot of times what's going to happen there is like the ball that you get is going to dictate where she covers. Like if the ball is like popped up to you to where driving it down the line is a good option, then yes, you'll stay a little more middle to cover middle. But like when the ball's like not up and attackable, she doesn't have to cover the middle quite as much because you're not going to drive it down the line if it's not an attackable ball.
Yeah. So very next point, after you kind of coached her up a little bit here, we do see her on her forehand for at least a couple of them.
She's kind of on the line. She's
Yeah. You kind of blocked off the next one. I think she did go backhand there.
Yeah. And
I think I recognize that she's gone to her forehand. And so I tried to get it a little bit into her body more. And
but yeah, early in the point, she did a great job. And then you can even see the fact she's straddling the sideline over there on a couple of those early forehands. That was toward the end. Oh,
yeah.
So here.
Yeah, right there.
She's at her right foot's outside the court. Right foot's still outside the court.
But then when I get her, she kind of can't come back into the court. So that's another great point, that her feet, and that takes trust in her partner. So she has to have somebody, but at the level she plays with, she's going to have a guy over on that side that's strong enough to cover the middle. So
yeah,
it probably is a little bit like you talked about, when she's playing more in her female game, she is more of the alpha, but she can kind of play both roles when she's or even more of the beta role when she's on the right side.
Yeah. And that previous point that just happened, she went back in again. So we went ahead and unwind it. I went down the line. I played the first ball. She played the first ball with her forehand good. And then boom, got caught on her backhand. Since she went straight ahead to Josh, it would have been a great opportunity to slide to her right. Mm-hmm. Knowing that I got middle, and she can slide and watch her line. Now, if she goes to you a little bit, she wouldn't slide as much, because she's going down the line to Josh. She really needs to now slide, whether she's thinking defense or offense, but either way, slide to her right, have the forehand ready. I got middle.
So as that ball is going across the net, she should be sliding to her right instead of sitting right there. Now she looks like she kind of takes a step a little bit to the right, but more back. But really, if she exaggerated that and jumped almost to the sideline, she'd be right there to slam it with her forehand.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, good stuff. Let's go forward. This next one, you'd written down short return, especially when unwinding, but got away with it. So I think I just missed a fairly easy shot. I'm trying to serve you guys wide as you guys are unwinding, and she hits a return from there. Doesn't quite get all the way back, but doesn't matter because I missed it. So
yeah, I mean, that was just more of a teachable. I mean, it's not like she intentionally hit a short return, just happened to hit a short return. But not only that, but the ball was a little bit more in the middle of the court, or even slightly cross court to you. That's why most of the time, if you're going to unwind, it's safer to go down the line with your return. Now, like I said, I don't think that was her intention. I think it was just a shanked return, but just kind of a more of a teachable moment, I guess, for the audience when you're unwinding the stack. Can't leave it short. Can't leave it down the middle.
Yeah. Default should be straight ahead on when you're unwinding. Is that right?
Yeah. All things considered, that's probably the better play. There are some variables, like maybe to avoid the person who's a better driver, or, you know, other things, but down the line does cut down their angles.
All right, next one here. Good early close, good drives, and she's sitting forehand more there. Yep. So again, when she does that right, you know, and she's just sitting, there's nowhere to go. You can't get it to her backhand.
Nope.
Nasty forehand.
Yeah. Her right foot, I think, went outside the court, like, initially, and her drives are really hard to read. Like, if you're in the position you're in straight ahead, I mean, she can rope it down the line to your backhand, which you feel like you can't do anything about it. She can also hit it down the middle. She can hit it a little bit cross court. So, I mean, Josh is also in a spot where he's got to cover two spots. You got to cover two spots. And, you know, she also just hits it hard. Sometimes if you're in the right spot, you can't do anything about it.
Right. And when it clips the net, that doesn't help my cause either.
No.
So, but you know what? When you're hitting nice low drives, if they're playing around the net, you're going to get some breaks like that. So,
yeah, especially on the temp nets at WoW. When you drive it hard enough, it's going over.
Absolutely. And then this is the one I have nightmares about, where she comes across one. I'm sitting, not guard my line as much as I should. And when she hits these drives, I mean, I guess, you know, she is outside the court though, so I should be more guarding my line. That's more on me. But she is so good at pulling those across her body and just driving hard down the line. That probably was either right on the line or just inside the line.
Well, so, and that one was so good, even if you're there, I don't know what you do with it with your backhand anyway. You probably end up popping it up and she drives the next one too.
Right. 100%. So anytime she can do that right down somebody's line, that's a good spot, especially since it's going to be somebody's backhand most of the time.
Okay. I think that was our one point. Maybe we didn't see it a lot, where She cut her dink with like a heavy slice, and it happened to float Josh. Obviously, it was unintentional. She meant to, you know, keep it a little more lower and unattackable. But there are times on her dinks where they're maybe a little too slicey, dicey, cutty, as opposed to maybe flatter and pushy.
Yeah.
And getting more depth versus the backspin.
Yeah, it's almost a strength. Like, if Natasha would have been a beginner coming up through the pickleball ranks, she would have learned how to hit, like, not a dead dink, but just more of a very simple dink. It's like her dinks are sometimes, she overcomplicates them. Is that a fair way to say it?
Yeah, I would say that there's oftentimes an extreme amount of slice or backspin put on the ball, like a cut. Which there's times for it, and there's people that, you know, they don't want to get into that, her backhand to their forehand, like knifing that she does with the dinks, and they can be effective in staying low, but there's also times where they just kind of hit and just spin themselves out, and then the ball's there, and right, you know, there's not much depth created with it.
But to your point here, I mean, look at where both of your positions, you're in the transition zone, you're mid-transition zone. This isn't, you're not going to hit a winner here. You know, you're dinking the ball. Your goal with this shot is to get to the kitchen line. So what shot is going to get you to the kitchen line? Well, it's going to be just a well-placed drop, more or less. Call it a dink, call it a drop, but from where you're at. So a little more height on it. And definitely, you know, dropping it in instead of where she puts it is pretty much on Josh's, you know, I mean, it's right at his waist level where he can pop it pretty much right back to her and then cause her to make a mistake. Yeah. So
I do like the fact that she went cross court with it, which is going to give her more room for air. And in mixed doubles, I think most of the time the guy is going to like the ball in front of them, as opposed to having her drop it down the line, and then the guy can't really be a biggest part of the play or impose their will. So I did like the fact that the attempt was cross court. It just happened to sit up a little bit.
Yeah. Another one where she has a nice drive with her forehand third. You know, I mean, it's a little high. You see where Josh hits it is, you know, waist level or even a little above, but it's kind of right into him, handcuffs him, gives her another, or gives you a shot then to get in. Then this is one you said you don't mind her. She's kind of backhand blocking it. Would just want to see it obviously go over the net and maybe a little bit more give in her defense opposed to trying to push it too hard here.
Yeah. And that, like I said, that was another case where the backhand was fine because we're still deep in the court. If she's running around hitting forehands on the whatever it'd be, like the fifth shot, then I have to cover 80% of the court. So her position was fine, and the fact that she played a backhand was fine. Get a little bit higher and safer shot, which we've all missed those before.
100%. Some of us more than others. This one, you said a good return, but played a backhand on the fourth. You'd want to see something a little different here on that fourth.
The ball was coming from court, and would probably be able to be a little more offensive with the first ball she hit.
You cut out there for just a second, so I want to make sure we saw this here.
There we go. So forehand on that one. And then she, you know, appropriately runs around and hits a great ball on the next one, where she does run around and hit a forehand. And then you slide to cover line, which means now Josh has got a lot of space to cover, and she hits a low ball to his backhand.
And she clips the net again. Not that I'm bitter. That was good. Uh-oh. Hope we haven't lost Ryan. He looks frozen.
Yep. I think we're back.
Okay. Very good. All right. Moving on then to the next point here. You said on this point.
She slid right on that one and did it well, I think.
Oh, this one here?
Yeah, I think the very next point. So there's a forehand.
Yep.
good ball off the net. She slides right away, loses up the forehand, and you know, basically made you miss over her right shoulder. It's kind of what we've been saying. If she slides and gets a backhand, the ball's out.
So this in slow motion is what we would want to see. You can see as I'm hitting it, she is sliding, basically saying, you're not going to get to my backhand this time. And then is able to really...
Right foot's outside the court.
Right. Left foot is real close as well. And then causes me to make a mistake, but stayed in the point and made us pop one up. So good stuff there. That would be the one to carbon copy and really get that whole idea of jumping. Sliding sometimes is a little bit of a misnomer. It's more of a jump.
A jump, yeah. Almost like in basketball or something like that.
Yep.
Yep, and that was perfect too. So she positioned herself, took the first ball out of the air, and then stepped over and cut off middle, because she's quick enough and long enough that she's not really giving away too much of the middle by moving to her right. I mean, she still has the ability to take balls down the middle that, you know, in that case, it was appropriate for her to pick it off because I was still kind of moving through the transition zone. So she cut it off and split you two. So that was a good shot.
And the worst case there for her is she lets that go and you're there. So it's like kind of like no risk, right? Like
slide
out wide. And then when I hit a pretty poor dink, that's up a little bit. Again, that's what I'm saying is that next level is being more aggressive with those. Sometimes I get too conservative on those and just say, I'll keep the ball in play, but you got to be able to take those balls that are, you know, at net level and attackable and go for it. And she did a great job on that one.
Yeah. And the last point that we just watched too, she played a backhand from back there, which was fine. Cause once again, we're at the baseline. We have to cover as much ground as possible. So no need to slide when you're at the baseline. So she played a backhand. Then she was in a position after this, stayed kind of that way to where she was probably going to be able to get a forehand if the ball would have come back to her.
Yeah. And I know one was a forehand, one was a backhand, but just look at the trajectory of this ball versus the one that she hit that kind of poor forehand with. If we slow-mo this one traveling over, it's got more height on it, which then dips down into the kitchen and doesn't allow Josh to really get a good attack on it there. So
yeah,
nice.
That was a pretty tough ball. It was pretty low when she picked it up too.
All right. So coming back on this next point, then we see an instance of, usually this happens to me, but I actually body bag somebody. Got Natasha there and really wasn't too bad of a dink on her part. Maybe a little high, but this is again what I said I'm trying to work on more is those balls that are at net level, trying to be a little bit more aggressive at them. That's one where I was able to get her right into her. She was kind of looked like she was starting to slide. And then that is kind of the one thing, like any thoughts on that, Ryan, where when you start to slide and you're setting up your forehand, you are exposing yourself. And I feel like that is why I get body bagged a lot, is I try to slide too much and expose myself.
Yeah, I think when you have a tendency to slide to go forehand, I think you're maybe less protected and therefore more likely to get body bagged versus people who slide to their backhand. I think are naturally covered and protected a little bit more from getting hit.
Yeah. Good point. All right, so here's a really good point here. Maybe one of the few that we had. So let's look at what we see in this one. Natasha doing a nice job of being over on her line there. Pushed you guys back, but you were able to get back to neutral.
Yep, and those first couple backhands that she hits are just fine, because once again, she's not quite on the line. We're not really totally neutral yet, so we're still trying to kind of get our way back. It was a couple shots before that, but Yeah, that was the back end dink just to kind of allow us to move in a little.
Yeah. And look at the positioning here again. She's straddling her line. So it's almost like she's been listening. And I put it up a little bit, not a great dink. And then she's able to really jump on it, slide and attack, you know, right between us and set up the rest of the point. So in retrospect for me, what I should have done here when I had this kind of dead dink is then gone behind you with all the space over there and just kept the point going instead of just throwing one up to either one of your back or forehands. Yeah. Then could have slammed. Not the smallest on my point part.
But even though we play with her all the time, we like a couple times a game always hit a shot where it's like, she's left-handed. Like if you're hitting that ball to somebody who's right-handed, that's maybe a little bit up to their backhand, you're not going to get hurt because maybe they can't attack it or they can't attack it quite as hard. And then you leave it up and like, she's left-handed. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I do that all the time too. So I'm glad to hear that I'm not the only one. The worst is when you play two lefties and it's like so confusing. At my tournament this last weekend, played against a team that had two lefties on it. And it's like, I feel like I'd spend too much time thinking instead of just playing.
Yeah, that is a really weird combination.
Last few points playing out here. So if you see anything, feel free.
Yeah, I'm not sure I remember seeing much from the last few points than maybe unforced errors from you guys.
I think we were in our own heads by now, but again, putting up dinks too high and that was that. So not Josh and I's finest moment. All right. So that does it for looking at the video with Natasha. So kind of, I'd say the biggest takeaway that we would have for what she could work on is just that whole idea of sliding over, right? I mean, that's, we would say straddling the line, even at times, even getting almost 2 feet off the line, as long as she is, she really can cover still several feet onto the court, even if she's almost all the way off the court.
Yeah, so. I would make the one condition more at the higher level mixed doubles games. Because like I said, a lot of times in a women's game, she's going to take on the alpha role, which means she's going to have to come off that line because she's going to take 60% of the court or so. And yes, she'll be susceptible to getting hit behind and have to play some backhands. But at the higher level mixed doubles games, slide to the right, get the forehand ready to, you know, defend, attack, dink, whatever. That's not to say that her backhand's not good. It's just that her forehand is so offensive that if she gets that forehand in position, she can win some points.
Yep. So, and I would kind of add to that as well. In the women's game, it's almost the exact opposite, right? I mean, she can almost play, you know, 60, 70, 80% of the court, and her partner taking more of the beta role can really slide over and almost hug their line, straddle their line with their, assuming they're a right-handed player, then with their forehand being over on the left side. So it can kind of go both ways depending who she's playing with, and heck, even depending who her male partner is or how much she's feeling it, you know. You could even do the opposite way with a male and slide them all the way over. So, that's a good thought to have. And that's why, I mean, I've heard some pros and some podcasts say before that the evolution of this game at the highest levels will almost always be, you know, a righty and a lefty in combination together. Now, I would say with the evolution of the two-handed backhand and how strong, you know, some people have gotten with their twoies, that maybe isn't the case quite as much because the two-handed backhand can be quite a weapon as well. But it definitely is something to think about in terms of having one of your players almost just sitting on the line. That's, we talked about it earlier. That's what Ben and Anna Lee do essentially. She's just sitting there and she's saying to herself, I've heard Colin talk about that, even playing with Ben, that he just knows anything that's going to his right side is going out. So all he has to do is worry about a ball that's coming, you know, right at him or right down the line. Those are the only ones that he's really concerned about.
Yep, exactly. And like I said, a few things I thought she did well, that she did a good job when the return was hit to me, trusting my drop and getting in really tight to the kitchen line to kind of to make her presence felt by you and Josh and pressure you into not being able to leave any balls up down the middle and have to go to a little tighter window back to me with your fourth shots. Seemed to do that really well, which she moves well too, which we know that and didn't really talk about. It's such an advantage because we almost always stack whenever anybody plays with Natasha this right-handed. The fact that she moves well enough to be able to unwind and not get into any kind of trouble is another one of her strengths.
For sure. And then maybe one other thing, just in terms of the dinking, and I see this with a lot of former tennis players, you know, it's not really, unless you're talking about like just a drop shot or, you know, you're trying to hit one of those touch shots, it's not really a big part of tennis. You know, the tennis game is played with, you know, topspin and trying to get that ball just barely over the net. So the idea of dinking or hitting a little bit of more of a lofted shot, I think, is foreign in a lot of the teaching that I do to former tennis players. You know, when we teach somebody pickleball from the very beginning, we talk about like a cornhole toss and, you know, having that kind of low to high. And so I think that's the part that some tennis players, and I see Natasha to some extent in this as well, has trouble with, trying to hit like too much of a cut. But a cut isn't always going to get down in time into the kitchen to force your opponents to hit a tougher shot. So just a little bit more loft, a little bit more of just a touch shot and not trying to hit it so flat, would be the other thing to help her kind of take that next step.
Yeah. Or even on a dink where she can push it a little bit to push it in a more, a flatter method rather than a cut to get it at her opponent's feet or to get them back up off the line versus the backspin that's created with her cut.
Gotcha. So instead of cutting across the ball, you're saying just pushing the ball more.
And there can be a little bit of backspin on it, just not the extreme backspin that like makes the ball check up, which kind of defeats the purpose of pushing them off the line. If the ball is going to essentially check up, then there's no reason for the opponent to get pushed back up off the line, because when it hits, it's just going to kind of die right there.
Stop right there.
And not create any depth.
Yeah. I think it must be from her tennis background, but when I think of her hitting dinks, all of them have that real choppy backspin that she's really trying to put on it. So you're just saying, instead of chopping across it, kind of pushing it more.
It could still have underspin, but just in a more of a push to it to create that depth on the dink to ideally get your opponent back up off the line to kind of open up the court.
Got it. Well, good stuff. I mean, if Natasha gets better, she's going to run a whole bunch of us off the court. So kind of hesitant to put this out there. Hopefully she doesn't take too much of it to heart. But no, we love Natasha and excited to see how not only her, but how you do in the NPL, and good luck with the draft coming up. I don't know. I haven't looked at the calendar, but maybe we'll do one more before your actual draft date. But we'll be excited to see how all that goes.
Yep. I think we still looking for subjects. So anybody out there, doesn't matter the level, you know, don't be intimidated. Natasha's a 5-0 duper player. So yes, we were kind of nitpicky and, you know, more critical than, with most people. So, just let us know. And, got the play site cameras at Ace. So it's an easy recording, easy upload to us.
Yep. We'll come find you if you don't find us. So, but yeah, send us those videos and we'll be excited to put you on our next BDO. All right, Ryan. Well, thank you as always. Appreciate you.
All right. Root for Purdue to lose.
Okay. Yeah, as IU fans, Ryan and I don't hate that. So at least they made it past the first round this year.
Yeah, they did. Tripped up by a 16 seed, you know.
It is Sunday afternoon. So have they started? Have you seen any?
Yeah, I think they're almost halftime.
Almost halftime. Are they winning or losing?
I think they were winning, but it's close. So.
Really? Okay. Utah State. Never know. All right. Have a good one. We'll talk to you soon.
See ya.
As always, we want to thank our sponsors, Hoosier Pickleball, Drive Alive Indiana, Ace Pickleball, and Whelan Real Estate. Reach out to Abby B for all your buying, selling, investing, and other real estate needs. In addition, a big thank you to the Ace Pickleball Studio in the world-famous Spiess Fieldhouse. Please make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or find us on YouTube at One More Game Pod. That's the number one More Game Pod. Hit that subscribe button and be sure to leave us a 5-star rating to help us spread the love. You can also find us on Facebook and TikTok at Hoosier Pickleball for all kinds of fun tips, tricks, and other family shenanigans. Thanks again for listening, and we will see you next time.